Got a little bone to pick with the programming department. Would it kill you every once in a while to play a little fog hat?
I'm not digging this cover of Slow Ride.
You're not?
Too slow.
Oh, that's what that's the way the ride should be, baby.
Oh, no, that's too slow. That's sleepy. That's boring.
Ah.
I don't want that.
All right.
Take it out of the rotation.
Fine, no more Fu Manchu for you, Dory.
Is that who this is?
Yeah, they're a stoner rock band from SoCal, bruh.
Generally, I enjoy their work.
Oh, really?
And I certainly enjoy their facial hair.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well, I gotta get right to the big lead here because we have an exclusive interview coming up in a few minutes. Got lots of news to get to. Let's jump right into the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
We told you yesterday that the cop-hating Seattle City Council, they want to cut the Seattle Police Department in half. They want to eliminate half the officers who are out on the streets. It is one of the craziest plans I've ever heard. It'll mean just an incredible surge in crime. We already have the worst property crime in the country. Now it's going to get even worse as you only have half the cops. Murderers will walk free. I mean, we don't have enough cops to solve the two teenage guys who were murdered at CHOP. Those killers, one of whom just walked up and straight up executed the 16-year-old kid. He was still moving, and then they fired a kill shot in his head. That murderer, that soulless being, is still walking free. We don't have enough cops to solve murders. And the cop-hating Seattle City Council solution is, let's have even less cops. More unsolved murders. More crime in Seattle. It's crazy. Yesterday, Lisa Herbold, she's the grandma with the nose ring. Cool. Edgy. She said she has an idea, because a lot of minority cops would get laid off if they cut the department in half. And she said, wait a second. Let's lay off cops, not by seniority, but by race. And we'll just start laying off white cops. This is coming from a white woman on the Seattle City Council. And as I said, let's start laying off white Seattle City Council members first. If that's going to be the standard for the police department, then we can get rid of the grandma with the nose ring. But that's what she wants to do. Lay off police officers by race. Carmen Best says that, of course, that's illegal. She says it's just
crazy.
It
is illegal to make layoffs based on race. And so I'm not sure where she's getting her legal advice from, but the persons who are advising us are making sure that we understand that it's illegal to do that.
But this is who and what is running our region right now. People who have never worked a second of their life in the private sector. They don't know how to write a check. They don't know how to balance a budget. They know that they want to impose the biggest business tax in Seattle history. But the 4,000 City of Seattle employees who make over $150,000 a year, they will be exempt, because government will be exempt from the head tax. The bloated crony bureaucrats that make up government will not be subject to the head tax. It's just the private sector. Government creates rules that punish the job creators, the tax providers, the private business owners. They punish them. And then they write in a specific exemption so they can get bigger and fatter and more bloated. And I will tell you, I'll go in depth on Monday about the city of Seattle and what they're doing, where they are mandating if you want a big six-figure administrative job, first thing you have to do before you prove your competency of being able to do whatever job you're applying for is you have to show them that you are a social and racial justice advocate. That is a new prerequisite if you want to get hired by the city of Seattle. And so it is on. If you don't think the way government mandates thinking to be, now you can't get hired for jobs. You have a attorney general who prosecutes based on your political ideology. He protects those who share his political ideology, and he attacks those who do not. We have a governor who decides what laws to enforce. He allows illegals here, but he screams when citizens say, well, I don't want to abide by that law. Oh, you can't choose which laws. Well, you choose the immigration law to ignore it, governor. It has gotten full on insane. All right. Across the state, there's a very interesting story of brewing. Next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
As we've talked about an awful lot the last few weeks, there is a crusade, a social justice crusade that's going on around the country. And in the midst of trying to convey a message about this crusade, there is just some horribly unfair storytelling that's being told right now. And for this example, I want to take you over to Yakima County, the home of Sela, Washington, which is the feature of a long profile today in the New York Times, essentially saying that Sela is a racist city. Even though they have absolutely nothing to back it up, the city manager for Sela, Washington is Rob Case, who joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Rob, I appreciate you taking the time with me this afternoon.
Thank you, sir. It's a great day here in the city of Sela, Washington. One small correction, I'm the city's lawyer. The city manager is Donald Wayman.
Okay, got it. So what is it like to have sleepy little Sela, all of a sudden the profile story in a New York Times piece today?
Well, it's a little bit surreal, but then I guess it's also not all that surprising. People have their different political views, and that certainly includes newspapers. And we knew this sort of article was forthcoming, and frankly, I'm not all that surprised at the slant that it offers.
Okay, well, let's talk about it, because the story is about some people in Sela, and they were writing in chalk Black Lives Matter on public sidewalks and streets. And as I understand it, Rob, it wasn't the message that was the problem. It's just that Sela simply does not allow these sorts of things to be written on public sidewalks and streets. Is that correct?
Yes, that's a correct summary. The most recent spat of malicious mischief that we've been suffering began with large-scale drawings and writings on our public streets. We received multiple complaints from other citizens complaining that, hey, there's drawings out there that are distracting to drivers, and don't you guys have a policy of taking those drawings down, because aren't those drawings in violation of the law? So we've been out there and cleaned it up multiple times. As I said, it began with streets. Then when we started cleaning it up, it moved to sidewalks and even to our public buildings, including a bunch of words that I'm not allowed to say here on the radio.
Sure.
On the side of our city hall and municipal court. And now it's actually also graduated into the use of aerosol spray chalk on sidewalks, which for us to remove that required not only pressure washing, but also sandblasting, and then the application of a surface coat to our concrete sidewalks.
Okay. So this, and as I said when I asked the question the first time, this has nothing to do with the political or social message that the sidewalk artists are putting forth, you would do this regardless of what the message is, correct?
Absolutely. And over the 4th of July, our municipal workers stumbled upon, photographed, and then promptly removed a large chalk art display that was in honor of a fallen war soldier. So the notion that we pick and choose based upon message is simply false. The city has had a policy for a number of years to not allow any graffiti or any chalk to stay up. When we find it or hear of it, we take it down, irrespective of what it might say, and also irrespective of any supposed artistic quality.
Well, and what's interesting is that there are cities across the country that have decided to violate local laws and codes by allowing this sort of thing. And Washington, D.C., Seattle has Black Lives Matter painted in the middle of the street here. And I have asked, could I get a bunch of my listeners, a few buckets of paint, and can I paint a political message in the streets of Seattle? And, you know, just something like equal justice for all. Something that should be, you know, universally approved and agreed upon. And I've been told, no, I can't, that they just chose to make an exception for Black Lives Matter. But I think you get down a very dangerous slope when government officials say, we're going to enforce or ignore laws based on whether we personally like the message that's being painted on the street. And we're in a really dangerous area when government is taking that perspective on things.
That is exactly the perspective that the city of Sela management, the mayor, the city administrator, and also myself and our prosecutor have, that we do not want to be like other municipalities that seem to be picking and choosing based upon content of message. We have a universal policy, and the reason we have a universal policy is the statute for malicious mischief in the third degree is likewise universal. It's not content-based.
Well, and so here we are. The New York Times decides to sweep in. You asked them to stop drawing. They didn't. The city brought out pressure washers. The graffiti artists tried to lie down on their words, and you just pressure washed, not you personally, but city crews. They just pressure washed around them. The New York Times takes all of that. They found the mother of one of the graffiti artists, and she said in the New York Times, it is clear the city's crackdown had everything to do with the content of the message and the fact that it was produced outside of the home of a Latino family. So the New York Times found somebody that supported their far left biased view going in, and now they're presenting this to the world as some kind of unbiased, objective reportage, and there's nothing factual to back up their take on Sela in the New York Times.
Yeah, it's disappointing that they offer quotations like that in the newspaper and just leave them hanging without a follow-up question seeming to be asked of how do you purport to know that the city is actually acting based upon the content of the message?
Yeah.
I have not met Ms. Perez. I believe the mayor had a meeting with her recently. I'm sure she's a great lady. I'm sure that her and her kids are passionate about this issue. And we have zero objection to that. Free speech happens in Sela, no different than anywhere else. We have not tried to stop the 7 or 8 protests that have happened. We're not trying to stop them from drawing on property when they receive permission. We're not trying to stop people from waving signs, writing letters, posting on Facebook, doing media interviews. The only place that we've drawn the line, no pun intended, is when it comes to defacement or destruction of public property.
And I want to make sure I understand. So if they wanted to, in huge block letters, draw Black Lives Matter in their home's driveway, you would have no problem with that at all.
Absolutely. In fact, as of right now, there are two such drawings on neighboring driveways that the Ms. Perez's children have been involved in. And in fact, that's one of the photographs that's up on the New York Times accompanying its article. Moreover, I don't have the exact date on the top of my head anymore, but a few weeks ago, the Sela School District, which is not run by the Sela government, but the Sela School District opened one of its large parking lots to specifically allow people to come draw Black Lives Matter messages. So it's not as though city management is out there trying to prevent these messages from being drawn anywhere and everywhere. Rather, as I say, the only place we are drawing the line is when it comes to public property without permission, if there's any defacement or damage.
Sure. Yeah. Is it true that you and other city officials are getting death threats over all this?
Yeah, there's certainly nasty messages that are coming in, some that are implied death threats, some that are probably explicit death threats. Now that the New York Times article is out there and Reuters and Fox News and almost every national outlet is covering this, we're getting messages from Canada and from Florida and from Timbuktu, frankly. And those people, sadly, just do not have a complete picture because most media do not want to give a complete picture.
Yeah.
I'm not going to play up the death threats all that much. Our city administrator is a former Marine colonel. He's been shot. He's been blown up. He's had true death threats on him from the Taliban. I don't think he's going to crack and crumble based upon a few nasty emails
right.
we're getting.
Hey, for what it's worth, I've always found the media in Timbuktu to be nothing but fair and unbiased. So you might have good luck with those guys there.
Sure enough.
Okay. Last thing. What's your take on the New York Times that had a storyline in mind, had zero within the story to support this narrative that Sela is a racist town? And, you know, like you said, I don't want to play up the death threats either. But what's your take on the New York Times, the most powerful, influential newspaper in the country, putting your little town of Sela in the crosshairs and trying to make you guys out to be something you're not?
Well, I'll speak from my personal behalf here as Rob Case, the person. I do not have much respect for the New York Times and have not for quite a while. The gray lady of old is dead. It has now become, in my opinion, a propaganda rag. Now, this article, I wouldn't characterize this as a 10 on a scale of 10 scale, you know, but I think their reportage in general is not fact-based, but instead is often editorial-based. And, of course, there was a recent high-profile resignation
yep.
of one of the few centrist authors that they had hired and why she needed to resign due to the pressure and harassment she was receiving from her fellow reporters. I don't view the New York Times as a fair publication. I view it instead as propaganda for readers who are already of a certain mindset. Now, that's my personal editorial, and if anybody else has a different view and values the New York Times, God bless them. Go ahead and buy a subscription, but they're not going to be getting any of my money anytime soon.
I understand. All right. Rob Case, city attorney in Sela, Washington. Rob, I enjoyed talking with you. I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Have a great day and a great weekend, Dory.
Will do. All right. And that is your Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
As always, love to get your comments on what you just heard. Text me at 98973. That's 98973. We're going to check the news for you. And then more on the effort to get your kids back in school. The very latest on that is coming up here on the Dory Monson Show. Sean, you're having a good day today, man. Good day.
Thanks, Dory.
Here to build you up. That's all I do.
Yeah.
People up.
Build me up, baby.
Everybody else wants to tear me down, but I just build people up. It's really true. All right. Keep this going for a little bit. I'll tell you some other stuff that's going on. Well, I have a music bed behind me. The battle over your kids going back to school this fall, it continues. Seattle Teachers Union has restated today that it is unyielding. They do not want any in-class teaching this fall. And I'm hearing from a lot of teachers who want to get back in class. And they fault their union. They believe what I've said. I don't think there's a more destructive force in public policy decision making than teachers' unions. They don't do what's best for the kids. They protect really bad teachers. I don't understand that about the far left, where they rightly, correctly say, hey, we got to get rid of bad cops. And a national movement starts because of that. And cities burn because of bad cops. But teachers who rape and are protected by the union, where's the outcry from the people who say we've got to reform our police departments? And we do, to get rid of bad cops. But why isn't there the same hue and cry to get rid of our bad teachers? And you know, the story I keep coming back to was the one in Central Washington a few years ago, where this perv middle school teacher put cameras, little lipstick cameras, under the desks of his middle school girls so he could try to get some upskirt video and photographs. He had his entire classroom wired. He had, I don't know if they had DVRs back then, but he had the equivalent of DVR, all kinds of recording devices, hard drives in the ceiling of the classroom. He had put cameras in some of the light switches, and as I said, under the desks and some of the little girls. What happens to him? Yeah, we get to pay him $25,000 to go away. The teachers' union said, yeah, we are not going to support you firing a perverted teacher. You want him to go bye-bye, you're going to have to write him a big fat check. Why do the same people who want reform of police and want us to get rid of bad cops, which, by the way, we all do, why are they not equally passionate about getting rid of bad teachers? But I digress. So anyway, the Seattle teachers, they want to get the same pay for almost no work at all, because the in-classroom teaching is 1,000 times tougher than the remote teaching. You got to deal with discipline problems. You're going to have to, I mean, especially this fall, you're going to have to send the second grader out of class because they don't have their mask up. I mean, there's a lot of stuff teachers have to deal with. And, you know, they get paid very fairly for the 9 months of the year that they work. But it's a lot tougher in the classroom. It's also a lot more effective. The online learning for our kids proved to be a disaster. It is also proving to be emotionally disastrous for kids to not have the socialization of being at school, of being scared to death, even though Jay Inslee's own doctor, state doctor, admits that kids are not getting sick even when they catch coronavirus, and kids are not transmitting the disease to adults anywhere near the level that Jay Inslee had been claiming. And as I said, that is the smoking gun of everything, that even Jay Inslee's own doctor has said that, yeah, everything Jay Inslee's been saying about schools has been wrong. This bears, I'll play this a million times. I've played it a couple times this week. In case people weren't listening earlier this week, Our Hannah Scott asked the question.
I'm wondering if you can tell me if you are seeing any cases of children getting the virus who become sick, or any cases of children getting the virus and passing it to an adult who gets very sick.
Any cases of kids with the virus getting sick or passing the virus to an adult? And so Jay Inslee handed that over to Dr. Kathy Lofi, and she had to be careful because she was contradicting everything her boss, Jay Inslee, has been saying the last couple of months. But she told the truth.
You know, the proportion of these 10 to 19-year-olds getting sick in King County is the same as the proportion of their population. It's a little bit lower in other counties, but kids are getting sick. Generally, you know, the literature shows us that kids do tend to get sick less frequently. And when they do get sick, they have milder illness, which is great. It also looks like kids are less likely. You know, the literature suggests that kids are less likely to pass it to other people. But that doesn't mean that it never happens.
Okay. So, I mean, that was devastating for Inslee because he's been saying the exact opposite. Kids who have the virus, they get less sick, and the kids who get the virus, they are much less likely to pass it on to an adult. Because the whole reason for shutting down the schools was because they were going to kill grandma. And Jay Inslee's own doctor has killed that narrative. So anyway, here's my point. If the teachers' union refuses to let the teachers go back to school, we need refunds for the taxpayers, because an online education is not an education at all for kids that age. Teachers, kids, parents have all told me that what passed for online learning in our state the last several months didn't teach a thing. And so, if the teachers are refusing to go back into the classroom, and as I've said, if you're a high-risk teacher, if you're 60 or older, if you have other health conditions, you should be able to do the online teaching. But if you're under 40, if you're under 30, and a teacher, half the teachers are under the age of 40, a quarter, or 30 or younger, you're not going to get sick. You'll be fine. If you refuse to do your job, the taxpayers should get our money back. And the parents of kids should get vouchers. And if there is a school, maybe a private school, that will have teachers in the classroom and you want to get that education, this is where vouchers, there's nothing that would lift up the educational field, level the playing field, like school vouchers. Because if you're upper middle class, if you are rich, you can and probably already do send your kids to private school. That is not a choice that poor and working class families have, for the most part. Now, some do. I mean, some just, you know, they scrimp and save on everything else in their life. But this is where, if we really want to lift up kids in the lower income demographics and give them a shot like the kids in wealthier families, we need vouchers. And we need those parents to be able to say, yeah, I'm not going to let my kids sit in front of a laptop for 6 hours a day for the next 6 months because daddy says so. So we need vouchers, we need to get kids back in school, we need competition for the schools that are failing our kids. And that's why I should be your next governor. I missed the filing deadline. Doggone it. Okay, it's Friday afternoon. Good Batch, our awesome audio of the entire week, is coming up next. I don't have any time to dilly-dally because we have a great batch and I got to get to everything. Let's get right to our favorite sound bites of the week.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Week.
Let's start down in Portland, where there has been rioting every night for something like 47 straight nights. The mayor there, Ted Wheeler, is the weakest mayor in the United States of America. And the poor cops down there, they just get nonstop barrage of abuse. This is a black man who is a Portland police officer, and he was talking about how the white protesters were just being horrid to
him. It says something when you're at a Black Lives Matter protest, you have more minorities on the police side than you have in a violent crowd, and you have white people screaming at black officers. You have the biggest nose I've ever seen.
Jeez. And he also said that it's just scary how ignorant the protesters
are. I got to see folks that really do want change, like the rest of us, that have been impacted by racism. And then I got to see those people get faded out by people that have no idea what racism is all about. Never experienced racism. They don't even know that the tactics that they are using are the same tactics that were used against my people. And they don't even know they don't even know the history. They don't know what they're saying. Coming from someone who graduated from PSU with a history degree, it's actually frightening. You know, they say if you don't know your history, you repeat it, and watching people do that to other people.
So well said. Black police officer in Portland there. Also in our awesome audio, a guy at Daily Caller, he went on the NBA online store. He was going to buy a personalized jersey because they said you're going to be allowed to have social justice messages where the names usually are. So this guy wanted, you know, the NBA has been in partnership with China. China has been cracking down on democracy in Hong Kong. The guy tried to buy a free Hong Kong NBA jersey. That wasn't allowed. But guess what was allowed by the NBA store?
So just to be clear, I could not get a jersey that said free Hong Kong, but I can get one that says kill cops on the back of it.
Yes, sir, you can get that one.
Okay. All right. Well,
yeah. The NBA store, they say that they have now fixed that problem. And then finally, at number one, if you want to see how pervasive groupthink is in the, you know, defunding the police, Jenny Durkin said
we have a historical opportunity and obligation to reimagine how policing can be done in Seattle.
Okay, reimagine. She said reimagine. And this is how it works. The Democrats, these are a bunch of politicians and their media member mob, MSNBC, CNN. Have you ever used the word reimagine in your life? Well, they've now been instructed that's the word to use when talking about defunding the police. And when you string them all together, it couldn't sound more ridiculous.
The folks in law enforcement that share the goals of reimagining policing.
Reimagining policing in the 21st century.
Rethinking and reimagining policing.
Community efforts to reimagine policing.
To reimagine policing.
We have to reimagine what policing looks like.
Reimagining policing, reimagining our public safety.
Reimagine a citizen-led approach.
You can begin to reimagine law enforcement.
Reimagine public safety in this country.
What can we do to reimagine public safety?
Reimagining public
a word
safety.
To that is not part of any normal person's vocabulary. And now they're all mandated to say it. Have a great weekend. See you back here Monday. High noon. Hey, no.
Show's over. Come on. Seriously, come on.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.